Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Black Friday, a huge day for retail workers and a day for the Labor Department discussing rights on the job. Today on the show, blue-collar babies, why America's working class needs affordable health care, and the United Steelworkers on getting the job done on infrastructure. Welcome to the Friday, November 26th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. This is a segment we started many, many years ago called Working Class Perspectives, and joining us will be Lane Windham. Lane is the Associate Director of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor out of Georgetown University. She works with John Russo and his wife, Sherry Lincoln. John started this segment about 12, 13 years ago. Lane is also author of Knocking on Labor's Door, Union Organizing in the 1970s, and the book Roots for a New Economic Divide. Well, she did a really interesting blog recently. Again, it's posted on workingclassstudies.wordpress.com. It's titled Blue Collar Babies, Why America's Working Class Needs Affordable Healthcare. And Lane points out, America's current level of child care support is laughable compared to that of other industrialized nations. Rich countries, and there are a few out there, they pay an average $14,000 a year to support a toddler's care. You know what it is in the United States? $500. $500. And this is a history lesson because she goes back to the 1970s, and Lane points out how we got here. And you may recall the Equal Rights Amendment, the feminist movement, which was attacked by the right wing back in the 70s. And that's primarily why we don't have what we should have today. It's been a very, very effective PR campaign by conservatives. And things need to change. That's the bottom line. They need a change. And Lane's going to talk about that. Tiffany McKee will be joining us later in the show, and she comes to us from the United Steelworkers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. She is the Rapid Response Coordinator for District 1. Now, District 1 covers the entire state of Ohio. There are 9 districts around the country for the steelworkers, and they started this Rapid Response group some years ago when there was a certain issue that needed to be addressed. They gathered all the people together that needed to be gathered, made phone calls, sent emails, maybe do a bus tour, postcards, you name it. It was a collective action to make things happen. And that's how we got that bipartisan infrastructure deal signed by President Biden just about a couple of weeks ago. So Tiffany is going to talk about the work that the steelworkers did to help get that bill passed. And, for the state of Ohio, since District 1 is state of Ohio, she's going to run down what it means. And I'm just going to run down a couple of the things that she forwarded to me. In Ohio, there are 1,377 bridges and over 4,925 miles of highway in poor condition. And if you go back 10 years, commute times have increased by almost 6% in Ohio. And on average, each driver pays $506 per year in costs due to driving on roads in need of repair. Now, that's just one aspect. Then there's mass transit, EV charging stations. You know, the automakers are going electric. Well, how are we going to maintain them on the road if we don't have charging stations? That's where the government comes in. High-speed internet, broadband internet, Let's see, climate change, cyber attacks, extreme weather. Under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, Ohio will expect to receive $26 million over 5 years to protect against wildfires, $25 million to protect against cyber attacks. See, these are just a few that Tiffany is going to run down. So hats off to the United Steelworkers for making things happen and moving the needle in the right direction, as I often say on the show. Well, as you know, today is Black Friday, a huge day for retail, probably the biggest shopping day in the year. And with that being said, the U.S. Department of Labor is doing a friendly reminder for employers to avoid compliance issues by ensuring worker safety and proper pay practices this holiday season. They even got OSHA involved. And here's the announcement from the Labor Department. With the National Retail Federation expecting retailers to hire more than 500,000 seasonal workers and employers hopeful for a busy holiday season, the U.S. Department of Labor reminds them not to overlook their workers' rights to a safe and healthy workplace and to be paid all of their legally earned wages. With many businesses open for in-person shopping, employers must also take steps to control and prevent the spread of COVID-19. The department's Occupational Safety and Health Administration is urging employers to ensure it properly trains all workers, especially new and seasonal workers, to recognize and prevent workplace hazards. OSHA offers resources on holiday workplace safety for warehousing, delivery, and retail workers. Guidance is also available for protecting retail workers, including those in high customer volume environments, stock rooms and loading docks, and package delivery from coronavirus exposure. OSHA is also offering additional information on workers' rights and protections, the protection of temporary and seasonal workers, as well as safety for young workers. Comment here from Doug Parker. Doug is the Assistant Secretary of Labor for Safety and Health. Doug said, "The holiday season is typically a very busy time for businesses, and just as consumer demands increase, so must an employer's awareness of keeping their employees safe." Doug goes on to say all workers, from those starting their first job to those making some extra money as a seasonal worker to those year-round employees, are entitled to a workplace free of hazards and to be trained in a language they understand to recognize and prevent any hazards on the job. The department is also encouraging employers, especially those not familiar with seasonal and part-time hiring, to familiarize themselves with federal wage rules to make sure they pay temporary and seasonal workers all the wages they earned. And as the law requires, the wage and hour division finds failing to pay salespeople and cashiers for time spent prepping or closing out registers, requiring stockroom and warehouse personnel to work through breaks without pay, and not paying workers overtime pay when required, are among the most common violations cited in holiday employment investigations. This holiday season and all year round, workers deserve dignity and respect from their employers, said Acting Wage and Hour Administrator Jessica Lohrman. Employers should ensure their payroll practices comply with all minimum wage, overtime, and child labor requirements, so those who depend on their wages to care for themselves and their families are able to benefit from their hard work. So that's the message on this Black Friday from the U.S. Labor Department, obviously making sure that workers are taken care of and not taken advantage of. One more here, and this is courtesy of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. In fact, we're going to have their executive director, Scott Paul, on the show on Monday. And they have come out with their 2021 Made in America Holiday Gift Guide. And if you go to the website, AmericanManufacturing.org, you will get the list of items made in America. It's so important that you support American jobs. Scott writes, it's my favorite annual tradition here at the Alliance. This year's gift guide shines a spotlight on more than 100 companies from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. We worked hard to include an eclectic mix of gifts at a variety of price points and to feature companies that we have not included in the guide before. So again, it's the 2021 Made in America Holiday Gift Guide. We urge you to go to the website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Click on it and buy American-made gifts. Simple as that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our segment on working class perspectives, talking about child care and the lack thereof in America.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment, good employment, I might add. You can find more at ulagency.org. Well, this is the day after Thanksgiving, last Friday of the month, and that goes to a segment we started many, many years ago called Working Class Perspectives. And joining us on line one right now is Lane Windham, and Lane has been longtime contributor to that blog. She is the associate director of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor out of Georgetown University. Also author of a book, and we featured her on the show some years back when it came out, Knocking on Labor's Door, Union Organizing in the 1970s and the Roots of a New Economic Divide. Well, I tell you, we got to revisit that book because there's a lot of organizing going on right now. Hey, Lane, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Flash, I'm so happy to be here.
And your blog is really, really good. I forgot to mention that in the opening here. Blue Collar Babies, Why America's Working Class Needs Affordable Child Care. And you know what I like about this, Lane, is how you took a look into America's history here. And I want to talk about this Netflix series. You called attention to it in your article called Made. I have not seen that yet. I want to talk to you about that. But let's set the stage here, because if you go back to the late 60s, the revolutionary time in America, and the feminist movement started then, went into the 70s. But then you had a lot of pushback. And the conservatives say, well, wait a minute. Women are not supposed to work. They're supposed to stay home and raise kids. And I want to tell you, I'll be honest with you. I come from a household similar to that. My mom, she did work during World War II, but she was what they called a housewife. She did not have a job. My dad was a steelworker, but I want to say something here. My dad, being a union steelworker, was able to make a very, very comfortable life for us. And precisely that's why women had to work, because many of those jobs went away. So, Lane, let's pick it up from there. What happened here that changed the dynamics of how we work in America today? Go ahead.
Sure, Flash. And, you know, it's so interesting that in this country we are finally having a discussion about subsidizing and supporting families in terms of childcare. You know, as you were just describing, there was this massive shift in this country in the 1970s when millions of women came into the paid workforce. They had worked before, right, but not for wages. They certainly had worked just like your mom in the home. But this country never stepped up to subsidize the child care to give working families the support they needed. And so, you know, every working family in this country can tell you how hard it is to juggle the child care, to juggle all those duties at home, plus the paid work with so little support. In other industrialized nations, subsidized child care to the tune of about $14,000 a year. In this country, it's $500 a year, right? And it's completely unaffordable for many people. They're paying as much or more for childcare as they're paying for rent or for their housing costs. And so, you know, there was a time in this country when, in the early 1970s, when we considered having universal childcare. People don't realize this, but in 1971, there was something called the Comprehensive Child Development Act, which would have created a federally funded national daycare system. And Nixon was ready to sign this bill, but the conservatives, the right wing, said this basically would, quote, commit the vast moral authority of the national government to communal approaches of child rearing. They didn't like the idea that that women wouldn't be at home taking care of children full time. And so they convinced Nixon not to sign this bill. And as a result of this, in this country, we are just way behind the rest of the world in terms of supporting our working families. And this sustained opposition over the years has been pretty potent and effective.
Yeah, I'm reading in your article that person that convinced Nixon was a speechwriter, his speechwriter, Pat Buchanan.
And apparently
he swayed him on that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, do you think if Buchanan didn't interfere, things would be different today then, if that legislation would have passed back in 1971?
I think that if this country, just at that very moment when we were having a big change, when women were starting to enter the paid workforce en masse, if at that moment, if we had stepped in and at the same time we passed OSHA, by the way, the same moment, if we'd stepped in and said we're going to have universal child care, then yes, we would absolutely have had a different system and a lot more security for working families. You know, during the pandemic, it has been so incredibly clear how much we need subsidized child care in this country. A lot of times child care has been kind of invisible, but man, it became super visible to employers when all of a sudden the kid was literally on the Zoom screen, right? Because their employees were at home, many of them, working from home, trying to do child care. And the kid was literally like, you know, Zoom bombing meetings. It became very visible. And I think that the public and employers and the government began to see, okay, this is something that we can no longer put off. We can't continue to ask people to juggle all of this because it's simply not working. And so, you know, childcare remains part of the discussion for the second part of the Biden Build Back Better plan, which is still under discussion, part two. That has not yet been signed, that's in discussions around reconciliation. That and universal pre-K remain a part of that bill. And so the discussion is definitely still live.
So, Lane, in your opinion, I don't know how much you have read into that that proposal that Biden has. What is in there now? And we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, there's a big fight going on in Washington with regard to that very issue from the hard right. And I'm just wondering, what we have now, will it suffice? Will it be good enough? Is it a giant step in the right direction, a baby step? What do we know about that?
It's pretty significant. Basically, in that bill, families who earn up to 1.5 times their state's median income would pay no more than 7% of their income on child care. People today, if they have a child under 5, are often paying up to 1/3 of their income in child care. So that would be a huge step. And for the most impoverished, they would actually have free care. It also would make preschool universal for 3- and 4-year-olds. And so it, you know, it's optional whether families want to send their kids to pre-K, but it would finally be available to families, and that would make a huge difference. Plus, and here's something I love: it requires that child care providers be paid a living wage, that they be paid adequately, because so many of them have not been making a living wage. We pay people who take care of our dogs often more than we pay the people who take care of our children. And that has to change.
Yeah. And then you get the bill for the dog that gets sick, which is astronomical. So, yeah, I hear you on all of this. That's phenomenal. 33% of their income. I did see a story. This was not long ago. One couple was paying more for child care than their monthly mortgage. And when you think about that, wow, you really... Especially when you're building a family, having a family and growing that family, you don't really throw that into the equation until it's actually too late. And you're saying, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Am I going to take another job? And then if you take another job, you spend less time with your family. So there's a lot of things. Yeah, there's a lot of things at play. Now, it's my understanding, and I'd like to get your opinion on this. You're hearing a record amount of people. And from what I've been gathering, many of them are women. Are quitting their jobs. We saw that record in August, and September beat that record. I want to say it was like 4.4 million people said, I'm done. I'm leaving. This job is not worth it. I'll find something better down the road. Is childcare a big part of that problem, Lane? What do you think?
Flash, it absolutely is. Women are voting with their feet. They are looking at the fact that this country still doesn't have good wages, doesn't have good jobs, we haven't made the changes we need to make. They are voting with their feet, and they are staying out of the workforce at an even higher rate than our men. And as you know, there was a huge quit rate in September. Well, it's been true during most of the pandemic. But they're not only reacting to the bad jobs, right? They are also reacting to the double day standard that we demand of women. Not only must they do their paid job, right, but they often do more than their fair share of care duties. They're shouldering the bulk of unpaid child and elder care, right? That's also a huge issue. And it's a balancing act that the pandemic has just made nearly impossible. And you know, it's no coincidence, Flash, that the sectors that are having the most difficult time retaining staff, staffing up, food service, retail, a lot of the health care, are majority female occupations. Women are looking at their options. They're dealing with the fact that they have to do all of this childcare. They are voting with their feet, and they are staying home.
We are at the crossroads, no doubt about that. Lane, can you stay with us for another segment here on the show, America's Workforce? Would you do that?
Absolutely.
Lane Windham is her name, and she is the Associate Director of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor out of Georgetown University. WorkingClassStudies.wordpress.com. That's the blog we're talking about. Blue Collar Babies, Why America's Working Class Needs Affordable Child Care. Key word there is affordable child care. We'll continue right after this.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And you can check us out on 6 platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis. Give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings. Always greatly appreciated. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Lane Windham. Lane is the Associate Director of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor out of Georgetown University. This is a segment we title Working Class Perspectives. Goes back 12, 13, maybe 14 years. Started it with John Russo and Sherry Lincoln, who are now at Georgetown University. John with the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor. In fact, he told me, he says, you got to get Lane on. Talk about this child care issue. So here she is today. And in this, in the blog, Lane, we were talking in the first segment about Richard Nixon. And I'll tell you, I got into radio when he was elected into office, actually a few years later. And I tell you, that was quite a time in America. And he was obviously vilified. He resigned in office, disgraced president. And when you take a look at him today, you think, oh, my God, this guy was like a liberal. And it's my understanding he had a universal health care proposal that he tried to get through. Apparently, Teddy Kennedy had one that he thought was better. So there was a fight going on there. So nothing happened. He also brought forth the Environmental Protection Agency, also OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, that's protecting workers. You think about all these things, and you mentioned that he wanted a child care legislation to pass, but it was talked out of it by the right wing. Fast forward to today, and you point this out. I'd like to hear what's happened today, because the right is now the far, far right. And you mentioned J.D. Vance, who is running for Rob Portman's seat in the state of Ohio. And you point out that he is opposing the federal expansion of daycare, claiming that children should be at home in family care. I have to wonder what world he's living in. And can you help me out on this, Lane?
Well, you know, Flash, I can't explain what is in J.D. Vance's head. I cannot do that. You know, I think probably many people wonder exactly what is going through his head. But I can, you know, I've read what he's written on this issue. And yes, he basically argues children do best when they're at home with their family, with their parents. But it is his argument is completely divorced from the reality of most working families, where, you know, most families require two earners who have at least one job each. They often have more than that in order to make ends meet. You know, though he doesn't say it, there is an implied element to what J.D. Vance is putting forward, which is that mothers would be the ones providing that family care. And because women remain the most likely to adjust their careers to accommodate the family. And so there's a gendered element there where conservatives don't like the idea of women having the independence of having that freedom. In fact, their opposition to subsidized childcare blocks women from gaining independence and economic self-sufficiency. That's something you're not going to hear from J.D. Vance, right? What you're also not going to hear from him is in order to have parents remain at home with children, whether it's the father or the mother, you need a whole system of support. Right. You need we need higher wages. We need more universal benefits. We need better jobs. We need a whole system to support that, not just, you know, shooting down daycare, shooting down subsidized daycare. That certainly is not the answer.
Yeah, I couldn't believe this stat that you have in your blog. 80%. That's 4 out of 5. Of single-parent households are led by women, and a full 35% of those mother-led families, they live in poverty. And,
that's
and
right.
It stands to reason. I mean, how do you make it? How do you make it unless you have some help on this issue? So I get the impression there's just a lot of people in power or who want to be in power. They're kind of stuck in the 1950s and maybe early 60s. And I go back to how we started this interview. There was a big time in America where mom stayed at home. I came from that family. But dad was able to support that family. Dad can't do that anymore. Just can't do it anymore. So let's talk about this show. And I have yet to see it. It's on Netflix. We do have Netflix at home. It's a series called Made, and this kind of encapsulizes what we're talking about. And I love it when TV shows kind of talk about what's really happening in America. So explain what's going on in this this new series.
Sure, Flash. You gotta see it. It's called Made, M-A-I-D, and it's on Netflix. And I think it is one of the best depictions that, you know, Hollywood has come up with in terms of what it's really like to be a working class person in this country, and how everything is difficult, how all the systems fit together to make life incredibly difficult. So in this series, a young woman named Alex flees a violent boyfriend with her 2-year-old child, and all of a sudden she has to make it. She has to have a pay stub in order to qualify for subsidized housing. But in order to get the job as a maid, right, she's got her 2-year-old, so she needs to find childcare. She ends up relying on her mom, who has mental issues, who, by the way, is played by the young actress's real-life mom, Andie MacDowell. So Andie MacDowell plays the mom, and the daughter is played by Margaret Qualley. And so basically all these problems are like a Gordian knot in her life, right? She needs she needs affordable child care. She needs affordable housing. She needs to be able to make a living. She needs transportation. all of these things are fitting together, and childcare is really the crux of the situation. She needs that affordable childcare. And I won't spoil it by letting you know what happens, but I will just say that I think that it really illustrates how difficult it is to make it as a young single mom in this country. And I highly recommend the show to your listeners. I hope that everybody will get a chance to check it out.
Well, definitely check it out. We love Netflix. There's a lot of good stuff on there. And this one is titled Made. So we'll definitely, it's on the must-see list. I'll put it, I just got to find time to watch. That's all. Okay. we got a couple of minutes left here, Lane. And I just want to talk, you talked in the previous segment about a lot of people voting with their feet, saying, you know what, I'm walking out of here. I ain't taking this anymore. And there's a lot of union organizing going on. And I know you wrote about this in your book, Knocking on Labor's Door, Union Organizing in the 1970s. Do you feel that we're in that time right now that and I really put this on the pandemic. The pandemic has changed so much. It changed all the dynamics in America. And workers now have power. They have a voice. What's your thoughts moving forward? How long is this going to go on? I know you're kind of speculating, but you know, you've been in this field for quite some time now. How do you feel about it going forward?
You know, it's a great question. I think that you are definitely sensing what I'm sensing, which is that we are in a kind of worker rights revival. Now, I'm not saying that people have all their rights yet, right? But they're fighting for it. And that there's a greater public awareness of just how poorly we've been treating workers in this country. And definitely the pandemic shook up what workers want and what they expect from a job. People are fed up. You know, we celebrated all those essential workers. We banged pots and pans. We saluted the nurses. And then we asked people to go back to those same old dead-end jobs with no respect. And their wages remain too low to cover rising housing costs, education, healthcare costs. People just aren't taking it anymore. And so you are seeing lots of strikes, as you mentioned. We had Striketober, now we have Strikesgiving. But there's also a lot of organizing. You see that workers are forming unions at Starbucks, at HelloFresh, and there's been a lot of activity among workers on university campuses, even. And as you mentioned, people are also, it's not just unionizing. People are voting with their feet and leaving those jobs. We saw that the quit rate in September was 4.4 million, which is a historical high in many ways. People just are not willing to make the kinds of sacrifices that we've been asking them to make for years. For 40 years, the entire employment system has rested on low wage, no benefits model that has really decimated people and their communities, and they just aren't doing it anymore. We are living through a moment, Flash. We are.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, this, I'm glad you pointed that out, because what's happening today didn't start overnight. This started back in the 70s and early 80s, and we're feeling the effects. We're also feeling the effects with the supply chain situation, because all those good jobs, union jobs, went overseas, first to Mexico, then to China. Now they're sitting on a boat. and we're wondering, well, wait a minute, maybe we should have made them in America or kept them in America. But that's another story. Yeah. Lane, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll let you go back to your Black Friday shopping. It is the day after Thanksgiving. And hopefully
Flash. Let's talk again soon.
Yeah, let's do that. Hopefully there'll be some American-made goods on that list as well. So you take care, stay safe, and stay in touch, all right?
Okay, take care.
You got it. Bye-bye. Again, Lane Wyndham, who is the associate director of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor out of Georgetown University. Again, this is our Working Class Perspective segment here on America's Workforce. Workingclassstudies.wordpress.org for more information. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our second guest, Tiffany McKee, on behalf of the United Steelworkers.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two, and welcome back to the show. We had her on a couple of months back. Tiffany McKee is her name, and she is the Rapid Response Coordinator for District 1 of the United Steelworkers, proud sponsors of America's Workforce. USW.org. is their website, and she had the opportunity to be at the signing ceremony for the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill a couple of weeks ago. Tiffany McKee, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
So talk to me. I mean, it's not too often that you get invited to the White House. That had to be pretty exciting for you, right?
It was absolutely incredible.
So explain to me, how did it unfold? Did they say, hey, Tiffany, we want you at the White House such and such a date? Is that how it worked out or what?
Yes. My director, Donnie Blatt, called and asked if I'd be available on that Monday to go to watch the signing of the infrastructure bill. And of course, I said, absolutely, yes. You know, there were unions from all over the United States represented there. And I was proud to be the representative for the United Steelworkers.
Now, you mentioned there were a lot of members of unions. Did you want to throw a few names out here? I'm sure there was quite a crowd there that day. Kind of paint a picture for that signing ceremony for me, if you will.
So I'm going to have to guess. I would say there was probably 100, 150 union members there. I seen firefighters. I seen the UAW, transportation workers, mechanics. I seen, I can't even remember all of the different unions that were represented.
That had to be so cool for you. I take it that was the first time you were ever at the White House, right, for something like that?
It was. I work in D.C. quite a bit through the Rapid Response Department when we go to testify at the ITC or to lobby on the Hill. I've been by the White House quite a few times, but I've never actually been in the White House. And, you know, there's so much history, and it was overwhelming at times. I broke down a few times emotionally just because of where I was and how incredible the event was and how important it is, not just to union members, but to every worker across this country.
Well, the steelworkers were one of many that had a major role in getting that bill passed. And I recall talking to you about the We Supply America campaign that was started months ago by the steelworkers. Because we want to make sure that the components that go into our infrastructure are made by union brothers and sisters. And you think about steel, bridges. My gosh, I mean, there's so many parts of our infrastructure, in broadband, the wiring. I mean, there's so many here. Talk to me about the role of the steelworkers on how you got from point A to point B. Go ahead.
So it all started off when, you know, we had the anticipation of a serious effort to pass an infrastructure plan in the United States. Senator Sherrod Brown and Representative Tim Ryan worked in the House and in the Senate, obviously, to get some really good language in that bill with the Buy American provision. You know, we had Buy American provision previously, but there were so many carve-outs that it really didn't do what it was intended to do. So with Sherrod Brown and Tim Ryan working to really give this provision a lot of grit, and Tim Ryan says teeth, to the actual provision, where any tax dollars that are spent on infrastructure has to be spent on American-made products, which is how it should be. Mm-hmm. You know, those are our tax dollars. They should be spent on products that we make here. So the United Steelworkers created the We Supply America campaign. And basically what that was, it started off with us partnering with our employers to write letters. In these letters, you know, it identified the products that we make or the services we provide and how those are incorporated into infrastructure. You know, what our products and services, how they play a role in rebuilding America. And then we also described on how the spending could really help support good jobs at our facilities, identified any infrastructure needs that we've seen locally or nationally for targeted rebuilding and renovation. So we took these letters that we these joint letters that we did with our companies and sent them to the Made in America department. And I just have to say how cool is that we have a department in Washington, D.C. that is literally called the Made in America department. So that was created by this administration. So mm-hmm. the job of that department is to procure a list of domestically produced products. So we wanted to make sure that our products were on that list. So we sent these letters to D.C. We sent them to, you know, our legislators, our federal legislators, our state legislators, and even down to our local mayors and councilmen, just to let them know, you know, what we make and how we influence infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So that's really how our campaign started. And then we did a bus tour where we traveled across five or six states and really highlighted what our members do, bringing a lot of national focus to, you know, this bill, the Buy American provision, and what it really means to America.
I remember we had you on when you were in the middle of that bus tour. So obviously that bus tour pretty much had an impact on getting this through then, right?
It really did. I do think it did. After the bus tour, we did postcards. We collected postcards from our members and the members of our community explaining, you know, why we need this bill and how we supply America. We dropped these postcards off at Senator Brown's office, Senator Portman's office in Ohio, along with some Congress men and women that really we wanted to influence, which is what the Rapid Response Department is all about. It's about influencing and holding our elected officials accountable.
Well, I tell you, it's so important. You know, I always say the squeaky wheel gets the oil, and obviously we got a lot of oil on this bill. There's no doubt about it. And we need it, too, because the American Society for Civil Engineers gave Ohio, and this is just Ohio, a C-minus grade on infrastructure. Now, Tiffany, since you're in District 1, which covers the entire state of Ohio, I know you've done an analysis on what this means to the state of Ohio. Maybe you can run down a couple of things that's going to happen here as a result of what Biden signed into law?
Oh, absolutely. As far as roads and bridges, there's about 1,400 bridges and 5,000 miles of highway in poor condition in the state of Ohio. With this bill, Ohio will receive $9.2 billion to repair our roads and $483 million for bridge replacement. 25% of public transportation vehicles are way past their useful life. So with this bill, we'll get $1.2 billion over 5 years for public transportation. $140 million over 5 years to support expansion on electric vehicle charging stations. Yeah, you mentioned broadband earlier. In Ohio, 14% of Ohio households don't have internet subscriptions. 2% live in areas where there isn't any broadband infrastructure at all. So with this bill, $100 million will provide broadband coverage. And with that also, 28% of Ohio people in Ohio will be eligible for the affordability connectivity benefit, which will help low-income families afford internet access. This is huge for our water infrastructure. $1.4 billion over 5 years to make sure we have clean, safe drinking waters in our communities. You know, right now in Ohio, there's 600,000 water pipes that are unsafe because of lead levels. You know, these are pipes that are going to our communities, to our schools. You know, the steelworkers just happen to have a local in Coshocton, Ohio, Local 7014, that provides, they make water pipes. It's McLean Ductile. You know, imagine how many jobs this is going to create at that facility if they need 600,000 water pipes made. You know, this bill isn't just about the physical infrastructure. It's about creating jobs, and not just any jobs. These aren't going to be minimum wage jobs. These are union jobs, family supporting jobs that it's really just going to be great for Ohio.
It's a game changer. And, you know, I don't think people realize, well, I know a lot of people realize how bad the roads are. I mean, you just drive around, especially northeastern Ohio, you know how quickly they deteriorate, especially with the severe climate conditions. You got extreme cold and then extreme heat in the summertime. But after a while, people get used to that and they say, oh, well, that's just the way it is. This is going to change everything. It's going to change so many things. And think about just health and safety. You mentioned the drinking water. I mean, people don't even know that they're being poisoned by lead, right? Lead contaminated pipes every day. And I had no idea. It was 600,000 miles of pipe or 600,000 pipes? What was that figure?
600,000 pipes in Ohio have unsafe lead levels in them that need to be replaced and will be replaced because of the passage of this bill over the next 5 to 10 years.
Unbelievable. And then there's the airports. You touched on the broadband, the EV charging stations. It's all good. And it's all because of union brothers and sisters coming together and writing those postcards, getting on that bus tour, making things happen so our lawmakers would understand that this needs to be done. And it's done. Well, there's more to do. I mean, we got the Build Back Better. We're working on that one. I'm hearing that there might be some legislation perhaps by the end of the year. But Tiffany, great job.
It passed the House.
Yeah, I did. It did pass the House. We just got to work on that Senate. It's not an easy task, no doubt. I'm sure you'll be loaded for bear on that one, and I'm sure we'll have you back to talk more about that. Tiffany McKee, District 1 Rapid Response Coordinator for the state of Ohio. USW.org is the website. You can also check them out on Twitter at Steelworkers and follow them on Facebook as well. Tiffany, you take care. Did I miss anything? Anything here you want to say in our parting conversation?
I think we covered it all, Flash.
Thank you. I'm going to let you enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend, and we'll talk down the road, okay?
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Tiffany McKee on behalf of the United Steelworkers. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, Scott Paul of the Alliance for American Manufacturing and Matt Rothschild, haven't had him on for a while. He heads the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.